Town Hall and the American Broadcasting Company present America's Town Meeting of the Air.
Town Meeting tonight! Town Meeting tonight from Town Hall, New York. What's wrong with our comics? Here, Al Capp, John Mason Brown, Maria Menes, and George Heck. Hear both sides on Town Meeting tonight. Town Meeting tonight. Everybody listen.
Tonight we mark the 498th broadcast of America's Town Meeting of the Air, which means that on March 16th we celebrate our 500th broadcast of this series, which has become a national institution. It was on May 30th, 1935, that this famous series started with a discussion of the subject, Which Way, America? Fascism, Communism, Socialism, or Democracy? On March 16th, we repeat that program with two of the original speakers, Raymond Moley and Norman Thomas. The other two speakers appraising the threats of fascism and communism, respectively, will be Leon Burkhead, president of the Friends of Democracy, and Martin Eben, author of World Communism Today. As most of you know, for the first 6 years, Town Meeting was broadcast only half a year each season. But by popular demand, Town Meeting went on a year-round basis in May 1942 and has continued on a year-round basis ever since. At that time, we began the practice of originating approximately one-half of the programs on tour and one-half in Town Hall, New York, our aim being to make it truly America's Town Meeting of the Air. And now, here is our moderator, the president of Town Hall, New York, and founder of America's Town Meeting of the Air, Mr. George V. Denny, Jr. Mr. Denny.
Good evening, neighbors. I'm sure that during the day, most of you have read your favorite newspaper, and if you scan the headlines of the front page, they probably read something like this. Vandenberg urges speed to balk threat against peace by Russia. Aviation Board asks 35,000 warplanes, says attack on U.S. is possible. But the really important news for a great many Americans, I suspect, is not found on the front pages, or in most cases, even in the front sections of their newspapers. Indeed, a summary of the important events of the day for some 40 million people might sound something like this. Dick Tracy smashes villainous shoulders. Or Daddy Warbucks returns. Or Fearless Fosdick captures Chippendale Chair. Probably more Americans read the comic page than any other feature of their newspaper, and hundreds of different comic magazines may be purchased at any newsstand in the country. Is it any wonder, then, that your town meeting has decided to explore this world of fantasy that has captured the interest of Americans of all ages? Let's take a trip to the land of the comics and find out what really makes it tick. Why do comic pages draw more readers than front pages? Is this good or is it bad? Is there anything wrong with the comics? Our guests, John Mason Brown and Maria Menes, both authors and lecturers, feel that there most emphatically is something wrong, and they'll tell you in no uncertain terms in just a moment. On the other hand, Mr. George Heck, publisher of Parents Magazine and other publications, and Al Capp, creator of Little Abner, comes staunchly to the defense of this $60 million industry. Parents and children, psychiatrists and psychologists, churchmen and laymen, GIs and John Does hold strong opinions on this question. So let's hear first from one of the nimblest minds in the world of literature, Mr. John Mason Brown, author and critic and associate editor of the Saturday Review of Literature and Town Hall lecturer. Mr. Brown.
The comics, alas, like death and taxes, are very much with us. And to my way of thinking, they are equally unfunny. Why they are called comics, when people who read them, young and old, always look like so many undertakers during the reading, eludes me. But we'll let that pass, just as most of us as parents have had to let comics pass into our homes, against our wills, against our wishes, against our better judgment. I love comedians, the highest, the lowest, and the toughest. And I love cartoons, too. But my allergy to comics is complete, utter, absolute. I know there are bad comics, and I am told there are good comics. I have read them, a few of both, only a few, fortunately, under protest. But I regret them both. I deplore them, and to continue the understatement, I abhor them. So far as I am concerned, they might just as well be written in a foreign language for which no dictionary has ever been published, and I wish they had been. Let me quickly admit that I am low enough and sometimes defeated enough as a parent to make use of comics. I mean in desperate moments when of a rainy Sunday morning or afternoon I want peace in the home, or when I'm traveling with my two sons on a train and I need to subdue them. Then, yes, I'll confess it, then I do resort to comics, without shame, without conscience. On such occasions, I don't so much distribute comics as I administer them to my sons. Much as a barkeep would pour out Mickey Finns, or a doctor distribute hypodermics, as knockout drops for unruly children, as sedatives, as Maxim silencers, comics do have their undeniable uses. This much I'll concede gratefully, Mr. Heck. I'll also grant that so long as other people's children read comics, we have scant hope, and perhaps less right, to keep ours from doing so. It would be unfair for us to deny to our children what is now a group experience, and when they have grown up will have become a group memory for their generation. If I hate the comics, I promise you I have my reasons for doing so. I know that as a part of every healthy diet, everyone needs a certain amount of trash. Each generation has always found its own. The comic books, however, as they are nowadays perpetually on tap, seem to me not only to be trash, but the lowest, most despicable, and most harmful and unethical form of trash. As a rule, their word selection is as wretched as their drawing or the paper on which they are printed. They are designed for readers who are too lazy to read and who don't want to read anyway. I won't and can't deny that comic books fascinate the young, as in terms of pigs, rabbits, rodents, morons, hillbillies, and supermen, they tell their illustrated stories. But as a writer, I resent the way in which they get along with the poorest kind of writing. I hate their lack of style. I hate their appeal to illiterate literates. I loathe their bad grammar, their tiresome toughness, their cheap thrills, and their imbecilic laughter. I hate them for making only the story count and not the how of its telling. I detest them in spite of their alleged thrills and gags because they have no subtlety and certainly no beauty. Their power of seduction, I believe, lies in the fact that they make everything too easy. They substitute bad drawing for good description. They reduce the wonders of the language to crude monosyllables and to narratives printed, which are really nothing but printed motion pictures. What riles me when I see my children absorbed by the comics is my awareness of what they are not reading and could be reading. In other words, of the more genuine and deeper pleasures they could and should be having. To compare Bugs Bunny or Donald Duck with the Jungle Book or even the Travels of Babar, and to set Wanda, the Wonder Woman, against Alice in Wonderland, or Batman and Robin, Dick Tracy and Gene Autry against Treasure Island, or Little Abner, if Mr. Cap will forgive me, against Huck Finn or Tom Sawyer, or Superman and Captain Marvel against Jules Verne or Gulliver's Travels, is to realize that between the modern cave drawing, which a comic book really is, and a real book, a good book, there is, to put it mildly, a difference, a tragic difference, which is hard on the young and may be harder on the future. Anatole France once described even the best books as being the opium of the Occident. Well, most comics, as I see them, are the marijuana of the nursery. They are the bane of the bassinet. They are the horror of the home, the curse of the kids, and a threat to the future. The comics offer final and melancholy proof that even among the young, The mind is the most unused muscle in the United States.
Thank you, John Mason Brown. Well, I'd say John Mason Brown is riled. Now, Mr. Heck, as a successful publisher of Parents Magazine and a number of comic magazines, in spite of Mr. Brown, including True Comics, Jack Armstrong, and other magazines for young people, what have you to say about his criticism? Ever since he graduated from Cornell in 1917, George Heck has made a success with publishing magazines which give useful information to parents and children. And we're very happy to welcome him on America's Town Meeting of the Air, Mr. Heck.
Nearly everybody, Mr. Brown notwithstanding, reads and enjoys the comics. Judge Albert Gary, when he was chairman of the board of directors of the United States Steel Corporation, once said that at a board meeting he found that every single member of the board of the United States Steel read the comics. The comics provide good entertainment and exciting adventure. There's far too little fun in this troubled world. In addition to comics that appear in the newspapers, there are, believe it or not, 246 different comics magazines. It is estimated that 40 million copies of comics magazines are sold each month on the newsstand. Surveys made by impartial research firms reveal that 91 out of every 100 boys and girls 6 to 17 years of age read the comics magazines, and only 9 out of 100 do not read them at all. Perhaps the most indisputable proof of the appeal of the comics magazine is that in the army camps during the war, comics magazines outsold even the best-selling magazines like Life, Saturday Post, and Reader's Digest, and as a matter of fact, outsold them 10-1. The comics are really a new means of communication, just as radio and television are new means of communication. I don't think that most people realize this. Comics are a series of pictures with a minimum of text that can be read with ease and speed. Many comic magazines consist of exciting adventure stories. All children crave adventure and should have some of it, even if it is only vicarious. Josette Frank, the children's book consultant of the Child Study Association of America, who has for years been studying the comics and who wrote a book about them, recently wrote, "Children read comic magazines because they find in them the satisfaction of some real innermost need of their own. In this modern world, children find too little opportunity for real adventure. Therefore, the comics act as a release for their pent-up emotions, as an escape mechanism, as a safety valve. The comics are really the folklore of today." The U.S. Armed Services use the comics as a means of teaching soldiers and sailors how to operate various weapons and how to conduct themselves in battle. They found that soldiers and sailors learned more rapidly by means of the comics. In True Comics, which is one of the magazines that our company publishes, we teach children history and science and current events via the comics. Through special comic folders, industrial workers are taught lessons of safety and health via the comics. On the other hand, I admit there are a small percentage of comic magazines that I consider harmful to young readers. There are a number of comic magazines on the stands that are extremely sexy and unduly deal with the activities of criminals, which magazines, I do admit, are harmful to the young. Some educational authorities declare that all comic magazines are bad. On the other hand, there are certain eminent child psychologists who state that all comic magazines are good for children, inasmuch as they teach them about life. I'm not in either camp. I believe that there are good comic magazines and bad comics, just as there are good books and bad books, good motion pictures and bad motion pictures. I do not believe the comic magazines should be censored by the government. I believe that the comic magazine publishers themselves should initiate a system of self-censorship, just as the motion picture producers have for years have had an organization to censor those pictures that would otherwise bring the movie industry into disrepute. I have been active in forming an association of the comic magazine publishers, and we are now in the process of drafting a code which we fervently hope all publishers will live up to. I believe, Mr. Brown, that parents and teachers should not condemn all comics indiscriminately, but should encourage children to select the better comics and to avoid the inferior ones. The better comics should be commended and publicized just as the better motion pictures are commended and publicized by women's clubs, educational and church groups, and better film councils. But no matter how you feel about the comics, there seems only one inescapable conclusion. The comics are here to stay. There is nothing wrong with the comics that good publishing cannot and will not correct.
Thank you, Mr. Hank. Our next speaker, Miss Maria Manners, comes from a family of distinguished artists. Her father is David Manners, and her uncle is Walter Damrosch. She's done sculpturing, she's written documentary movies, poetry, articles, and stories, which have been published widely. More recently, her first novel, Message from a Stranger, was published this spring by the Viking Press. Miss Manners has very positive opinions on tonight's question, so we're happy to hear them on America's Town Meeting of the Air. Miss Manners.
Certainly, Mr. Heck, the comics are here to stay. If they weren't, Mr. Brown and I wouldn't be so angry. But I will open my attack with a kind word. I am all in favor of adults looking at comic strips in the newspapers. It keeps them from reading the editorials. And since, by some curious coincidence, the most popular strips are neighbors of the most irresponsible press, this is an excellent thing. The strips save people from contamination and also from thought, a maturing process which is definitely un-American. My fight is against the power of comic books over children because I consider them first and foremost a colossal waste of time, the infinitely precious time of growth. A time of growth. A child grows by learning, by playing, and by dreaming. Comics supply none of these needs. They do not teach, Mr. Heck, unless you consider education a series of facts coated with the laxative of fiction. They are not play because the child is passive reading them, and they kill dreams. They kill dreams by presenting the child with ready-made images and ready-made ideas that leave him nothing to create by himself. They do not stimulate imagination, they substitute for it. Comics replace fantasy, which is the soul of the child, with contrived formulas of an adult mind which knows a good business when it sees one. The business of selling 40 million comic books a month to children who cannot discriminate. Comic books are not only a waste of time, but a waste of eyesight. With few exceptions, comics are very ugly. Bad in drawing, bad in color, bad in print. The human beings in them are ugly even when they are meant to be handsome. The stalwart young men with coat hanger shoulders and nutcracker jaws are travesties of the male. The bosomy, overpainted, and abysmally vulgar women are travesties of the female. The so-called funny characters are merely repulsive. The crime and horror comics are not only ugly in appearance, but ugly in thought. Oh yes, they make it clear that crime doesn't pay. They're full of righteous conclusions and sentiments where right triumphs and wrong is punished. But right triumphs by force and violence. Right triumphs by the fist and by the gun. The impact of the fist on the jaw is the comics law. It is an ugly law. Comics language is in the main ugly. It perverts the English language with slang, with sloppy contractions, with bad grammar. It is the speech of the vulgar and the illiterate, or, at the other extreme, so stilted in an effort towards correctness that it becomes laughable. I'm all for laughing, but I choose my comedy. There are, of course, exceptions. It would be dishonest to deny the harmlessness of some. The Disney comics, a few westerns, some teenage strips, or the charm and humor of a strip like Happy the Humbug. It would be dishonest to deny the efforts of some others, like True Comics, which my opponent, Mr. Heck, publishes, to supply the child with truth instead of horror. It would be dishonest to deny the homespun comedy of Lil Abner, don't mention it, Mr. Cap, or the gentle satire of a strip like Mr. and Mrs. In measured doses, these can supply relaxation and entertainment to which a child has every right. But the doses are not measured. Comic books are the addiction of 3 out of 4 American homes. In 1 out of 3 American homes, they are virtually the only reading matter. Repeat, the only reading matter. 40 million children are growing up on this kind of nourishment, or this total absence of nourishment. For comics are not food, they are a drug. They are killers, killers of time. What an indictment of our time that it has to be killed. What an indictment of a way of life that a child has nothing better to do than read the comics. I know by heart the arguments of the defense. Mr. Hecht has already given most of them. Comics, they say, supply a universal human need for adventure, for excitement. They're merely today's version of yesterday's dime novels or the fairy tales of the past. Nonsense. Even the cheapest dime novels our fathers read as boys demanded the ability to read and to imagine. As for fairy tales and legends, they are the accretions of human experience. They are not the commercial stencils of businessmen and syndicates. The defense will say, comics give an outlet to the aggressive needs of children. Nonsense. The aggressive needs of children can be satisfied far more naturally by a game of prisoner's base. Comics are not an outlet, they're a sublimation. The final triumphant argument for the defense is, comics give people what they want, therefore they are all right. Fine. Children want to go to the movies every day, listen to the radio all night, and never go to school. Is that all right? I say it is not. I say with Mr. Brown that the comic book is the greatest opiate on the market. I say that with few exceptions, it is a killer of time and a killer of the imagination. I believe it keeps the child from the joy of reading, the excitement of thought, and the happiness of play. And I believe that a steady, uncontrolled, and indiscriminate diet of comic books can stunt a child's mental and spiritual growth just as much as a steady malnutrition can stunt his physical growth. Those who make comics may not be in the business for their health, but they should be in it for our children's health. Until they are, they stand guilty of more than taking candy from a baby. They are taking imagination from the child, and that is a crime.
Thank you, Mario Manis. Now, I'm sure that all of our listeners, all readers, rather, of Lil Abner, wish we had television here tonight so that they could see the creator of their favorite comic. There are those who say he resembles his brainchild. But the only obvious resemblance is that both are broad-shouldered, black-haired, and frequently get into scraps. Well, Mr. Cap is in one tonight, and he has the fourth position. But he will no sooner finish speaking his piece than Mr. Brown and Miss Manis will be able to strike back at him right here in front of this microphone. So let's hear now from the creator of the nation's most popular comic, Al Capp of Dogpatch, I mean New York. Mr. Capp.
There must have been a lot of innocent little kids who... Listen, I'm sure they were frightened to death listening to Mr. Brown tell them what's wrong with their comics. I'd like to hear a town hall forum of the same kids on the subject, what's wrong with dramatic critics. They might, with complete righteousness, make the same complaints about dramatic critics that Mr. Brown makes about comic strips, like, for instance, dramatic critics are a waste of time. Dramatic critics are very unfunny. They're bad for the eyes. They're untrue to life. They're horrible to think about. Dramatic critics are not only the bane of the bassinet, they're the tidy service of the nursery. Of course, as any fool can plainly see, these kids would be wrong. Because kids just aren't the best judges of dramatic critics. This point occurred to me during Mr. Brown's speech. Dramatic critics just aren't the best judges of kids. Now, this whole thing gives me an idea for one of my own contributions to juvenile delinquency, which I call, rather defiantly, my comic strip. The scene is a typical American home of a typical American family named Kinsey, of course. Supper... supper is over, and seated in the living room are Mr. and Mrs. Kinsey and their 11-year-old son, Kingsblood. They're discussing what they've read in that day's typical American newspaper. Mr. Kinsey says he's mighty pleased about the new atomic bomb, which can blast the bloody brains out of 200 or 300 million irritating foreigners. And then he chats about the prize fight in Chicago that resulted in one of the young athletes being punched to death in front of thousands of happy, cheering, typical American sports lovers. But Mrs. Kinsey is more interested in talking about the latest society divorce and the front page excerpts from the fun-loving young matron's diary in which she refers with fine, wholesome frankness to her dates with 20 or 30 of her husband's dipsomaniac chums. Well, little Kingsblood has gone through all that, and frankly, it bored him. He's reading the one page of the family newspaper where there's real action, the comic page. Mrs. Kinsey, noticing that little Kingsblood isn't joining in this uplifting discussion of the front page of their family newspaper, glances over his shoulder and screams a typical, horrified American mother-type scream. "Look," she screams to Mr. Kinsey, "look at what your child is reading. It's only Dick Gravy," replies little Kingsblood. I'm referring here to a certain detective comic strip, which shall remain nameless because I'm too shrewd to give a rival all this valuable publicity. "Only Dick Gravy, my eye," snarls his mother. "Why, this thing is full of murder, crime, violence, and look. But there's even a boy in it who doesn't think that a girl in it is repulsive, so it's full of S-E-X, too." Mr. Kinsey speaks. He says, I've been reading several articles lately by several psychologists or psychiatrists or something that state that these stories of murder, crime, violence, and, and S-E-X are very bad stuff for kids. He says, "Why do you bother with that old comic page anyhow, son? Why don't you read the news, son?" It's his son he's talking to. "And I did, Pop," replies the lad, "and oh boy, it's all full of murder, crime, violence," and he winks an S-E-X too, Pop. Mr. Kinsey looks over the front page of the paper, and he's got to admit that the kid is right. He tears the newspaper up, cancels his subscription, and he says, "Then according to those articles by those critics and psychologists, news is bad stuff for kids, and those psychologists must be right because all the articles about psychologists all say they're always right, and those articles must be right because they're written by other psychologists." "Son," Mr. Kinsey says, pulling a volume off the bookshelf, "why don't you read a good book instead, like Oliver Twist?" "I read it," reports little Kinsey. "It's about a kid who falls in with a criminal named Fagin who teaches him how to commit crimes. And then there's a big gorilla in it named Sykes. He beats a girl to death and stop," cries his father, "stop. I can see now that the work of Charles Dickens is very bad for kids." So he tears the works of Dickens all up. He feels he owes this to the psychologists. Now, Mr. Kinsey, with all those articles by the psychologist in his mind, goes through his typical American family bookshelf. He reexamines Treasure Island and Kidnapped by Robert Louis Stevenson. He finds several very deplorable murders and lots of rip-roaring crime and violence in them, and he tears them all up. He's very tired by this time. Alice in Wonderland has got to go because the queen and that keep saying, "off with their heads," and that's not only violent, but it often results in death. Well, pretty soon, there's nothing left in the house except a phone book and a volume of Shakespeare. With a sigh, little Kingsblood picks up the volume of Shakespeare and begins to read, and with a loud roar of, "No, no, no, my child," his father snatches it away from him in the nick of time. "This book is full of stories of murder, crime, violence, and S-E-X," he roars.